Welcome to El Telejon's La Liga Weekly. I demand that Lionel Messi plays a football match. He hasn't played since the 21st of March, isn't due to play again until the 5th of April. How lazy is this man? He is here for our entertainment after all. He could have played as a guest for Spain, since Luis Enrique treats every game like it's a friendly. He might as well go the whole testimonial energy or lack of energy. The 2010 World Champions got 4 points from two World Cup qualifiers so far. They have made 1,654 passes and had 5 shots on target. And only one of those games was played with a flat ball. It's a good job they had the right people on commentary on Sky this week. Thank you for the patrons have sent us questions, by the way. The rest of the podcast listeners, we did, and it's a two-parter. So the patrons have had one part, but we're sharing the rest because that's the kind of people we are, sharing stuff for free. Now, we did ask a question. Actually, I'll stick this out on Twitter as well, so you can answer this as well. Well, Jackie asked us a question about who Terry would like to have a pop-up. We'll get to that in a bit. And because we'll just discuss Spain first of all, and then we'll give you the answer to Terry's one-man hit list. Welcome to Peter Nicolaides, by the way, who is our latest Patreon. So, Peter, thank you. Welcome along. Peter is a long-term supporter of the podcast. What you get is extra stuff, and you get an invasion, and you get to keep the pod going, which is good because independent podcasting requires basically people to pay for it. Is the conclusion that we've come to, because it doesn't really work if you just trying to get paid for it, because the BBC are launching 17 new podcasts on football every week, and it's quite hard to survive. Darren says, a pleasure hearing the two of you as a commentary team again. Thank you, Darren. I couldn't help but smile when John was singing the praises of Terry's La Liga and Spanish football knowledge right at the kickoff, like a friend who's been put on a CV as a reference. I would. I consider plugging the podcast on it, but we were being paid by Sky, so obviously I thought maybe shouldn't. But it's true. I know there are Premier League football clubs who've got La Liga specialists, and actually some of the people who listen to us watch an awful lot of La Liga and do know a hell of a lot about it as well. But if I had to rely on someone to tell me, Araibar playing the wrong formation and my life depended on it, I would come to you, Terry. So there we are.
They have tinkered with it too much this year, if I'm being honest.
Right, but Darren goes on to say, Pedri's question about Pedri. We'll get to now. Let's do Spain, and we'll come back to Darren's question. So Spain, get on your nerves. Quite frustrating, isn't it? Because they should be better than they are. So here's the question: right, are they not as good as we think they are, or is Luis Enrique tinkering too much and making it worse than it needs to be?
Both.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Both. I think they're not going to be as good as they once were in, you know, the peak days of Spanish football, winning two European Championships and World Cup, because that team was a one-off, and quite frankly, amongst all international teams, to be perfectly honest, for that period. The superstars that they had, I mean, mostly from Real Madrid, mostly from Barcelona, and the likes of David Silva dropped in that as well, and David Villa, world-class players. Every position was filled by a world-class player. And they had a style of football that people found hard to deal with. It was an incredible period. Now, and since then, I have to be honest, they've disappointed. But I do feel that the second part explanation there is correct as well. That I'm baffled, if I'm being honest, by the squad selection, team selection of Luis Enrique from game to game. And, you know, I don't want to lump in and be critical of Luis Enrique too much, but I just find it puzzling that he does appear to me to feel that each game is quite easy and he can experiment. And, you know, players come in and do reasonably well, then they're completely out of the squad again.
Yeah.
He's hampered at the moment by injuries as well in one or two positions. I think Gerard Moreno is a loss, who's not fit at the moment. But there are other alternatives. As it stands now, Morata is the only out-and-out striker, centre-forward in the entire squad. So that could have been rectified by bringing in, you know, one or two other players. I took Aspas would be a worthy inclusion. Roger Marti, for instance, Levante, You know, if you haven't got any other centre forwards, you can't just do without them. You've got to use some of the other players. Same for the right back position. Ander Kappa, Mario Gaspar, two really good right backs. You know, Danny Carvajal is missing through injury. Navas, I'm not sure why he wasn't in the squad. There's been no real explanation other than the fact that we're led to believe it is because of the incredible amount of football he's played in the last year as an attempt to rest him so he can be slightly fresher for the European Championships. Odrio Zola is injured, another player that could have played there. So instead of bringing in Pedro Porro from out of nowhere or playing Marcos Llorente at right back, he's got two really good right backs in La Liga, in Gaspar. Hugo Mayo is another good, solid right back that fits the bill that could come in and do a job, earn a cap or two, as opposed to an untried player that didn't work, that was replaced early in the game. Old Marcos Llorente playing at right back, who's clearly not a right back. You know, he should
be playing in midfield, shouldn't he, Marcos Llorente?
Yes. Yep. There's lots of players, you know, missing, and it's a mystery. One or two players, say someone like Sal. I think Sal should be in it. I think Marco Asensio should be in it. Suddenly the quality has gone up. But neither of those two were in the squad. So it's baffling as to why he's, you know, making so many changes. Mikel Merino is the perfect example of a player that has been doing well in the Spain national team. It's a good progression. Under 21 player, playing well in La Liga, gets a call up for Spain, does well, plays a few games. Now he's not even in the squad. So, you know, you look at the two central defenders as well. Eric Garcia doesn't play for Manchester City. Diego Llorente has had his season at Leeds blighted by injury. The two of them start together. Nigo Martinez came on in the first game against Greece for Sergio Ramos at halftime and didn't start last night. Now, for me, I would rather have Nigo Martinez and Yerra Alvarez, even Unai Nunes at Athletic Club, who's like the third centre-half, you know, when they just played two. He would have been better than Eric Garcia and Diego Llorente. So I do find it strange that we started the game last night, didn't we? We said there's no Real Madrid player in it, no Atletico Madrid player in it, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
Starting. You think back at, you know, I still think there is an element of when opposing teams are playing Spain, if they look at the bigger names, it does give them an element of fear. Now, when you see the team last night and you're Georgia, you're thinking, we've got two players that, you know, don't barely play for Manchester City. We've got one player that barely plays for Leeds at the back. We've got a young boy making his debut at right back that's on, you know, loan at Sporting Lisbon. And you probably feel that's a back four you can have a go at. So Jordi Alba was the only sort of recognised superstar in that back four. So they're not as good as they once were. His selection process is baffling and that doesn't help. I'd be interested to see come the European Championships how serious the squad is. If you suddenly get Carvajal, I think there's the makings of a really good starting 11 in there.
Is there?
Which could win the European Championships.
That's the question, isn't it, with it, is whether they have, which I'm sort of beginning to wonder, whether they've just got good depth. So there are lots of good players around, but very few really exceptional players. If you're looking at a World 11, or say a European 11 to take on South America, how many Spanish players you're putting in it is a question. Whereas if, you know, if you said, name me 50 players who are perfectly good enough to play in the Euros, I could do it from Spain. So
if you went Carvajal, say Carvajal's the right back, or Neves,
yeah,
either Jordi Alba or Gaia, either.
Yeah.
You could have Ramos, Nigo Martinez, Pau Torres. If you're picking a back four from that group, that'd do me.
Yeah.
I think that's four players there that'd be good defensively, good offensively. Then you look at the options available in midfield. I think Busquets and Rodri as
either or.
Midfield players, either or.
Yeah.
And I would have said two months ago, Rodri, but I think Busquets is back in form.
Right.
He seems to have picked up confidence at club level and taken it into the international game. So I think that's a toss-up. Possibly, it's a difficult one to call that. I wouldn't play both together unless you're going to be playing a 4-2-3-1. But if you're playing a 4-3-3, I think either of those are good. So there's a good start. I'd still go with De Gea in goal. I'm not sure that Unai Simon has done enough to be the undisputed number one at the moment. And then you're looking at Morata's goal scoring record for Spain is good.
Yeah.
I think there are other options. I think Gerard Moreno is fit. I mean, Rodrigo at Leeds, it hasn't been particularly great for him at Leeds, but prior to that, he was in good goal scoring form for the international team. So there's three more than, decent centre forwards. And Morata's record is really good goal scoring record for Spain. And then there's a whole bunch of attacking, creative midfield players and wide players that I think you've still got enough in there to create a good, strong starting 11. And Fati would be a bonus now.
Let's assume he's injured, I think. But actually, shall we put this out to the listeners, actually? If you want to...
Yeah, I think you could play Moreno wide on the right in a free, couldn't you? Because that's what he's done for Villarreal. Morata up front, and then you're looking at another option on the left.
Yeah.
There's a whole group of players that, whichever one's in good form. I mean, there's people like Munir and Oliver Torres at Sevilla that have never... don't get included anymore. Joan Jordan.
Yeah, but this is sort of feeding into my point a bit, isn't it? That there's lots of players who you could stick in, but a lack of players who you say he must be in.
Who's a David Silva or a Xavi.
So I think if we put this,
Fabregas.
Put this out to people. So anyone, if you want to send us it on Twitter, so at La Liga _weekly or at Driscoll FC. Stick Terry on it as well, at Terry Gibson 88, or Patreons through your usual private channels, the Patreons, a bit like the very rich people have access to politicians. It's like that, Terry, they're secret channels. So Patreon, send us yours secretly. So send us your 11s. My guess is that you'll get, if we get like 10 people, we'll get no 11 will be the same.
Yeah,
that's my thought on Spain. I think it's probably the case for, that's probably not that unusual. I think that'd be the same if you did England as well, I think, wouldn't it? I think if you got you'd get identical ones.
England is similar. The days where Spain, their team picked itself almost, didn't it? It was just whether are they going to play a centre forward or not? That was the only issue. I have to say it was great to work again last night. I know it's been, lockdown has been tough in terms of the job that we do to get a job at Sky. And to be working with you and to do Spain and to have supporters in the stadium.
Oh, it's good, wasn't it?
It's a really enjoyable occasion. Lockdown's, I've found lockdown tough in terms of work. Even seeing people,
So we were immediately followed by, because it's all, we're all in Sky doing this, but we're in, it's at a big studio, isn't it? Whereas previously
you did it
from Booth. Yeah, so it's in the Soccer AM studio. But it doesn't look like that, does it? Because it's a lot of that green screen, isn't it? So it's just basically like a bit like a shed, isn't it, that you're in? Yeah. but it's good because obviously that allows you to... Because we were at separate desks, weren't we? You were miles away from me. I couldn't actually see you when we were commenting. No,
exactly. The
great big TV monitor in between us. but then, because Rob Palmer and Tony Gale came in afterwards, and they were pretending to be in Germany
Romania.
Yeah, we used to pretend. Yeah. And
Tony Jones and Don Goodman before,
who were doing the France game, weren't they, against Kazakhstan? So, actually saw people. And often in the past, people used to dash away, but now you see people, everyone wants to talk, don't they? Because some people who aren't my family to talk to.
Yeah. No, it's tough. I mean, but people don't realise that the freelancers, which I've been all the time since I've been working for Sky, you get paid when you are asked to work.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are people at TV companies that are contracted that get paid no matter what work they do.
Yeah.
A lot of work or no work, there's a fixed fee. And that's been the road that these TV companies have gone down, where they're using the people that they've basically already paying and already paid. So the games, I've probably done about 6 commentary games in a year, maybe longer than that now.
Yeah.
And it was nice to have that role again last night. Comfortable to be doing Spain, of course. Comfortable to be working with you. So it was an enjoyable evening, a rare ray of light in a tough year. Most of my work has been done with you on podcasting remotely, and my La Liga TV work, because obviously I haven't been able to get out to Spain, has been done via Skype, 90-minute, 2-hour programme every sort of couple of weeks. Again, you're not seeing people. You're meeting people on the laptop and the computer.
Yeah, not the same.
So it was nice to get out and about last night, do some work, do some prep. And it was good, an exciting game, wasn't it? Because of the situation that the match was played in, dramatic ending. It was great all round. So hopefully we're going to get back to some sort of normality soon. One day, where work is a little bit more frequent and contact with other humans is
nice,
more frequent.
Yeah, but I think it's often overlooked when people talk about media. Obviously, they generally focus on the people at the very top of the media. The vast majority of people on air in the media world, and a lot of the people, the young kids now doing production work, it's all very precarious, isn't it? There's a minority of people have got a steady contract and a pension and all of that kind of stuff. The vast majority of people that I know are just surviving day to day, and so you go out of fashion, fashion changes, and suddenly sometimes things like this happen that out of your hands, and suddenly a contract disappears or a producer changes and all of these things, and suddenly, bang, it's all changed. So it's a very precarious business. But there we are. Just being honest, everybody, And I know you've all got your problems as well, but, we like to moan about our problems. quick question from Darren. Actually, it's not that quick, but it's worth considering. Pedri's composure under pressure in the game was once again hugely impressive. John made the point about work overload. Talk of him being part of the Spanish senior squad for the Euros this summer, that they also want him to go with the side to the Olympic tournament in Tokyo. Giving the lad no break after a condensed season amongst the highest number of minutes played in the Barcelona squad. Surely someone's got to intervene at some point and manage his workload. Otherwise, burnout or serious injury may not be far away. Ansu Fati's struggles this season should be a cautionary tale.
Totally, 100%, totally agree with it. There was times, he's one of these players as well that when you look at him, I looked at him last night towards the end of the game, and I have to say, he was immaculate again last night. He does everything good. Mm. I moan about Dembele, who's got all the talent in the world, but doesn't take care on every single thing he does. So whether it's a finish, a pass, a cross, occasionally, more than occasionally, Dembele, gets that wrong. Pedri, he just does everything good. Really good all the time. It's remarkable. As the game progressed last night, I thought he was a little bit quiet in the first half, but he was the instigator in the second half. An 18-year-old kid is now suddenly developing into one of the key players at Barcelona and for the national team. And yes, I totally agree. He has that look sometimes of being jaded, doesn't he? But he socks are halfway down his legs. He's not particularly worried about how he looks in terms of style. He just gets on and does the job. And the temptation is for Ronald Koeman and Luis Enrique to keep playing him because he's that important. Barcelona need him. They've got a chance of doing the double. They need him. I don't see any way that Koeman can rest him because of the nature and the schedule that's coming up for Barcelona. So, they're not going to rest him for the Clásico. They're not going to rest him for the game against Atletico Madrid, because he's one of their best players now. It's going to be tough. I don't agree he should be going to... I mean, let's chuck him in the under-21 championships in the summer as well, should we? Play him in that, play him in the European championships, play him in the Olympics and give him a week off and then he can come back and start again for Barcelona. So that's how stupid that would be.
Yeah.
And, at some stage he needs to... I mean, 18, I presume, and I never experienced it myself, he's still growing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I stopped.
Still skinny, isn't it? Yeah.
I stopped at 13, 14. But, 18, his body's still developing, which was almost my argument with Ansu Fati that he was 16, 17 when he was playing. And he's now got the knee injury issue that's, hopefully he's not rushed in the slightest this season and he can have a full, long, proper recovery, get over it completely so this doesn't infringe on what we hope is going to be a glittering career for a super talented young player. So Pedri, they have to be careful, but I don't see where they're going to be. That's the problem.
Callum wants to know, how worried are you about Ansu Fati's recovery prospects, his future development?
I don't know too much about it, to be honest. I think it's his third operation, which is a concern. It is a concern. I mean, you don't want to be having bits of your cartilage taken out. when you're that age, because we know the impact that can have on it. I know it. When I was younger, players, when they had a knee, a cartilage injury, had the whole cartilage removed straight away. And in many cases, they're crippled now. You know, as they're, they've gone into later life, it's bone on bone, they're limping, knees constantly swelling up, painkillers. But over the years, they developed the technique of shaving it, shaving the cut. So I'd mine done, and touch wood, it's one of the few injuries that doesn't give me too much grief.
Yeah.
So they started shaving the cartilage rather than just removing it completely. I had some teammates that had all the cartilages removed in both knees.
Yeah.
With a big 8-inch scar down the side of the knee. Now it's keyhole surgery, clip away a bit of the cartilage that is torn. And so hopefully, you know, modern medical procedures don't mean that it's going to be essentially chronic for Ansu Fati, that he can recover fully from this and it won't give him any more concerns. But it is a concern, of course it is. 18-year-old, I mean, your knee messed about with triple surgery. It could be a massive issue. And, you know, please God, he makes a proper recovery and it doesn't affect him anymore. So fingers crossed. Yeah. Not ideal, far from ideal.
Yeah, agreed. Let's crack on with the questions. Stuart Thomas Gilroy says, quick one. Well, as quick as you like, Terry. Who is the best form player outside of the top three? And a long one. We've seen and heard much about Barca's youngsters this season. How likely are they to build the new team around, or are they being developed to be sold off to raise finances?
I think they're untouchable. I think the best young ones they've got, no one will be able to buy them. So Pedri and Fati, completely off limits. Raujo is getting that way as well. He was doing fantastically well until his injuries. Serginho Dest they've just brought. So, no, I think there are obvious players that might possibly Barcelona want to move on. So I think the young players of Barcelona, why would you want to leave? I mean, if you're playing regular, it depends on the manager, of course. And, you know, Koeman is currently the manager. If another manager came in and didn't want to play young players, then it becomes an issue. But I think
the Ricky encouragement Pooge.
Is always there. Ricky Pooge, I think the encouragement is always there, isn't it, for Barcelona, for a coach to promote young players from the public, from the media, from the people that run the club. So I'd like to think they're in good hands. And it would take huge money to take them away. Even in Barcelona's current predicament, I think they're the last players they would want to lose. Outside the top three, Gerard Moreno.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's an obvious candidate. It's quite a straightforward selection.
Too old? Is he too old to get a big move? He's 30, isn't he, I think?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I did, because Villarreal got a massive buy clause on him.
Yeah.
Very well-run club, and they won't sell him for anything under his valuation. Mm. The buy clause is 100 million. No one's going to pay that. Yeah. He isn't worth that, of course, but to get anywhere near doing a deal, you're probably looking at half that to tempt Villarreal.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. Mm. But Villarreal, it's a fantastic place for him to be, you know. And I have to be honest, he's a player that I've recommended for years to clubs in the UK, in the Premier League, and no one's ever fancied him.
Mm. Why not?
I think probably because of clubs he's been at.
Right.
Espanyol, Villarreal twice. Mm. I think they always look at, you know, spending big money on a striker, that it has to come from, you know, one of the big clubs, maybe a Sevilla, maybe a Valencia. But certainly, let's go Madrid, Real Madrid, Barcelona. Once you start talking about a centre forward at Espanyol, it's going to cost. I mean, when he left Espanyol to go back to Villarreal, it was about 10 million euros, I think.
I think they paid 20, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
They
had a clause to get him back, didn't they?
Yeah.
Having let him go to Espanyol.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, people in England didn't think. I think a lot of them couldn't make up their mind what position he was.
Yeah.
He's not your traditional big centre forward.
Yeah.
And that probably went against him slightly. And, you know, but I've always been a big admirer. His form now is incredible. I mean, he's. Adderis, I mean, we're talking Adderis territory soon, aren't we? From the age of 30 to 38, his career went upwards and onwards. So, you know, for a 30-year-old striker who's in good shape, still would be a good asset for a very, very good football team. So I think he's the obvious one in terms of goals, assists, and his importance to a team. If he's missing at VRL, they suffer a big loss. So likewise with the national team now.
Alison wants to talk about Isco. She says she can't see him staying at Real Madrid beyond this summer, given his lack of playing time. He's not being called up to the Spain squad either. Would love to hear what club in La Liga you think might take him, obviously with a salary reduction. And then Jackie, one of our other Patreons, said, not sure what his... I'm not sure if I'm doing the guy a disservice, but I could see him going to Inter Miami or on a similarly glamorous adventure in the MLS. Like Bale before him, he doesn't seem particularly exuberant or enthusiastic anymore. Alison agreed, while the MLS would probably fit him, the clubs tend to sign players who are free or out of contract. I don't see Real Madrid letting go for more than 20 million because he's one of the few players they'll still get some money for who appears to be surplus to requirements. So is Isco's future, is it in America?
Well, I'm a big fan, always have been. And I hope he does leave Real Madrid for his benefit. I hope he, and my benefit, I want to see him playing on a regular basis. My prediction, I wouldn't be surprised to see him at Seville.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. Yeah, I think there's a, you know, possibility of him linking up with Lopetegui again. That's been muted in the press. And I kind of feel that would be a good club for him. Hmm. I can't recollect the relationship of him and Lopetegui. I think it was all right when he was at Real Madrid. Solari was the one that left him out, wasn't he? Initially.
Yeah, I can't remember.
Lopetegui came in and he got back involved. So I think he needs a manager that believes in him, first and foremost. He needs to go to a good club. He's not going to be any use to a team that's fighting relegation. So I think a good footballing team, would he go to Real Sociedad? He would fit their style of play. I still think he's got the potential. I don't think he's passed it. But I want to see him playing on a regular basis. And I mean, it can be easy to criticise him and Bale for not looking interested, to lack enthusiasm. But sometimes it goes deeper than that. It's, you know, on a daily basis, your manager doesn't fancy you, no matter what you do. And that takes its toll on your self-esteem, on your confidence, to go in on a daily basis, I talk from experience, and know that you're training for nothing, really. No matter what you do, it's not going to change. And sometimes that really becomes tough over a long-term period. And I just feel with the right club playing again regularly, with a manager that believes in him, we could still see Isco at his best. I think he needs to be in better shape, but that comes from not playing on a regular basis for, a year now.
Would you recommend him to a Premier League club?
Only that needs Isco.
Yeah.
He needs that position, doesn't he?
Yeah,
there's still an element of confusion. He's number 10.
Yeah,
second, you could go with a second striker, but not with his back to goal.
He's are got there many clubs doing that now? Yeah,
that's the problem. So he's immensely skillful, can find a pass. When I say skillful, he can beat a player, work his way out of trouble. He can open up a defence. So any team that needs that player, I would still back Isco to be a success. But I hope we see him playing on a regular basis. It's a waste to be honest. And another, it comes in that category of filling it with bigger names, the Spanish squad. If suddenly you've got Isco, Asensio, and other players of that ilk sell, it looks a more daunting proposition, doesn't it, for the opposition when they're playing, when you're Georgia and you're playing against, you know, big name players. So Isco, I'd like to see, I can't see him getting back in the Spain squad. Not currently, but maybe in the future.
Paul Campbell would like to discuss Atletico. Would they ever move on Simeone? No great revelation, but I feel the club is in a bit of a limbo between its elite status and its underdog roots. While everyone involved at Atleti has its best interests at heart, there's confusion as to how to proceed. I think the issue is the transfer policy, Atleti buying quality players, but not with the characteristics their manager is asking for. For example, Lodi's a great player, but he's nothing like Felipe Luis. This leads to confusion for Simeone into how to integrate a cluster of different players into a style of football that's narrow-minded and particular in what is needed to succeed. So he's right, isn't he? I'm at the top of the league, so it's not a crisis, but they are caught, aren't they? There's a bit of an identity crisis going on, isn't there, between what we all consider to be Simeone's instinct and what you might consider to grow to being a proper super club.
No one ever signs for Atletico Madrid without Simeone, say so. Yeah. Guarantee you that.
Yeah.
They're not a club that are buying players behind his back and deciding who comes in without Simeone saying so. Everything that happens to that football club on the football side, he has the final say. So that makes it a bit more confusing as to why he's buying these players when they're not his type of player.
Yeah.
Are they going to move on him? Simeone ain't going to move on Atletico Madrid. He's the highest paid manager in the world. Yeah. 35 million euros a year. There are other clubs around the world that would love to have Simeone as manager, but they're not going down that road until he starts winning more trophies again for Atletico. You know, I think it's been too long now since you know, they're not the underdogs anymore. They can't pretend that. They could when he first took over. What he's done is incredible, Atletico Madrid. We expect them to be challenging for the title. We expect them to be doing battle in the Champions League in their later stages. When they're not, it's a little bit of a shock. So it's, I can't see any way how, unless Simeone calls it a day, I don't see, and the talk is they're going to sign him, they want to offer him another deal.
Yeah.
Which it takes him out of the hands of so many clubs. And also, it's not just the money, it's the power that he's got at Atletico.
And as style, yeah.
Yeah, as I said, with the power in terms of he is the boss. There's not many clubs he's going to be able to go to and run the show like he does. Let's come into it. So I agree, it is baffling. Sometimes they sign a player and you're thinking perhaps it's an element of borderless, Hertafe, where he's trying to change, but something won't let him. Something won't let him. He wants to bring in a more creative midfield player, but then, no, I can't do it. I'm going to go back to what I know. You know, it's, but nobody signs for that club against the will of Simeone.
Yeah, but it's a rut, basically, isn't it? It's a rut, but it's a quite a successful one in that it's not obvious that he would go anywhere else and have massive success. For example, when the Chelsea job is next up, you know, which is usually frequently, you could look at him, but you think, no, because one, there'll be an expectation of a certain style of play. And at the moment, he almost, because he's so powerful at Atleti, because of what he's done, he dictates the style. And we all get a bit frustrated. You know, I share Paul's frustrations, but no one's going to move on him. No one's going to sack him. Whereas if he came to, or if he went to Juve, or probably not Juve because of his interconnections, but or if he was Bayern Munich coach or somewhere like this, the expectation is to play a different style of football. Same as Real Madrid and Barcelona, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like Zidane gets away without it, in my opinion. But so he's perfect for Atleti in that respect. No one's going to pay him the money. So it is a bit of a rut. And there's a danger is that you just get a bit, everyone just gets a bit bored of it. But then you think, I can't see him doing better and I can't see Atleti doing better without each other.
I think personally, I mean, he had seven jobs before he took Atletico.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, he's been there a really long time now. It's great. I mean, he's transformed that club. They were up and down, mid-table, challenging for the Europa League and stuff like that to finish in the league. He comes in and new, you know, wipes the slate clean and suddenly they're winning titles, Champions League finals, qualifying for the Champions League every year. So it's unrecognisable from pre-Simeone. So, and I think my opinion is the only other job for him is Inter. He's emotional. Yeah. Or the national job, Argentina. I think that's something he will fancy. But I can't imagine him ever getting the power at another club. He might have it the minute he walks in through the door.
Yeah.
But that might be, that doesn't last. It takes, you know, the time he's been at Atletico to build that power. So half a dozen dodgy results and he could be, you know, under pressure. So that it's a great job for Simeone. It really is. Fantastic stadium, fantastic support, fantastic players, fantastic backing from the owners of the club. So it's not all about, I mean, and he's the highest paid manager in the world.
Yeah, the equivalent would be
if you went with each other.
If someone went to Spurs and then won the FA Cup, won the Europa League, and won the Premier League in three seasons, that then how much power would that person have? That's the equivalent of where Simeone is, isn't it?
Yes.
Because Atleti were a big club, but a very frustrating club, weren't they?
Yep.
And they were a classic. They had good players, you know, they had brilliant players, but never all at the same time, and never put it together, and hadn't. Since he was a player 20 odd years previously in the 90s, wasn't it? So that's where his power has come from. As Martin says, they won't get rid of him. He guarantees Champions League football. Atleti need that money. We'll be interested to see what a club would do to blow the league if they blow the league. Yeah.
But yeah,
I think they'll.
But tell you what, there is some work to do. This is Simeone. You know, Simeone's team take a 1-0 lead, there's 20 minutes to go, and he starts making the negative substitutions.
Yeah.
It frustrates everybody. It frustrates even the Atletico Madrid supporters. He's doing that with the lead they had in the league now. So, from a month ago, he's defending a lead.
Yeah, yeah.
Team selections, the style of play, the tactics. Are all about defending a lead.
Yeah,
that's my fear. If I was an Atletico Madrid supporter, is why they will blow the league instead of continuing as they were and going out and attacking every game of football. What we're seeing now is the first half is caging. Let's have a look at the opponents. Let's see what they've got and try and make some changes to expand and get a 1-0 win. And that's the reason. If they blow it, that will be the reason why. So, in effect, he's defending with probably 15 games to go in the league. He's defending a league in the same way he defends a game of football when they're 1-0 up. And that could be the problem. Hopefully, his mindset changes when they come back. The lead is narrower now. And, I mean, those two games against Levante, they never attacked Levante in the slightest. They wasted both games the first half. By looking at the Levante and saying, what have you got? Let's keep it nice and solid. Whereas they should have gone out and been 2-0 up at halftime in both those games. Attacked with the better players, with a better team. Attacked a team that's in the mid-table. And they didn't. So hopefully when he comes back, we see João Félix playing every game. We see Marcos Llorente playing in a more attacking position. And we see a more positive approach from Atletico in terms of what we've seen in the last 4 to 6 weeks. So then if they do that, they win the league. If they carry on trying to defend this lead, because we know what's going to happen when they play Barcelona, he is going to be looking, don't get beat.
Yeah.
And that could be the game where the league turns itself on its head, because we know Barcelona are going to play. They're the team coming from behind. They're going to be more positive. But could you imagine if Simeone sent out an Atletico team that went for Barcelona? They could well win that game and win the league. That ain't going to happen, though.
No, it's not happening. No. Right, one last question. And this was the one from Jackie. He says, right, Terry recently said that watching the Chelsea Atletico game is pulse raced at the thought of him getting onto the pitch and having a crack at Rudiger. Go on, Terry, to cut him down to size. My question is, of all the current La Liga players, who would Terry most like to get stuck into? Please say Jordi Alba.
No, that's an easy target. He's the same size as me.
I thought Pedri. I thought, go on. Or Ansu Fati. So, one of those skinny kids. Go on.
Rudiger rattled my cage because he was being an aggressive bully, and the minute he got touched, he threw himself on the floor and showed that he's not as tough as he was trying to make out. So that was the nature of it. Well, I was sitting at home thinking, oh, I'd love to have been 30 years younger. I would have, give him one back or something. In La Liga, my challenge would be, don't get me wrong, I didn't mind a tackle, didn't mind being aggressive. I had to be from God knows what age, 17 when I made my debut for Spurs, and 5'4" and just over 9 stone. If I didn't wise up and fight back, I was never going to have a career in football. So I had to put myself about and throw myself in front of defenders and match fire with fire. So, but now I would like a challenge. So it would have to be against a certain type of player. I feel that I would have a slight advantage on at least one thing, and that would be pace.
Yeah.
So, and then I don't mind that, put my foot in, and if he wants to kick me, I'll give it back. So the challenge would be against who are the best. So I would go with Ramos and Pique.
Right, okay, yeah.
Certainly Ramos. I'd love to have had the challenge of playing against Ramos. A brilliant player, but that would be the challenge. It would be easy for me to pick and say, Eric Kabaka, Getafe, or Xavier Cheta. I think I could do them or beat them for pace. The challenge would be the best. So I would love to have had a crack at Ramos. Not because I think I would get the better of him, but I would like to, have had that experience like I had an experience of playing against Alan Hansen, Mark Lawrenson, Paul McGrath, and other great, you know, central defenders that were around in my era. The challenge would be to play against the best and see what you could do.
Who
and,
did you
and
have
I'd be confident Ramos the most that I could
physical confrontations with? Who are you kicking and being kicked by?
No, everybody. Everybody. The exceptions, it was the other way. Hmm. The exceptions were an Alan Hansen or a Mark Lawrenson. Gary Gillespie, when he played for Liverpool, footballing central defenders that didn't need to kick you were few and far between. If football was in a centre half by its nature in that period was an aggressive position, and every week, you know, nailing you early on didn't get you an automatic yellow card, and therefore, you know, you had to be first and foremost. You even had to look like a centre half. When I played, you know, they had a look, didn't they? I mean, yeah. I played against Mickey Joy of Chelsea, was the biggest player I've ever played against in my life. I don't know if there's any Chelsea supporters listening that are of a certain age. His head was the same size as my body. It was an absolute giant. And you know, by nature, they had to be big, strong. I found it tougher against the quicker opponents because my asset was pace, so I therefore a Tony Adams or something. I liked playing against a Tony Adams because, you know, if they want to squeeze up and play offside, I'll try and beat that offside trap and they'll never catch me. I had a problem, say, against a Des Walker or a Paul Parker that had matched my pace.
Yeah.
That was where, you know, I found life more difficult. So the better football in quicker central defenders were tougher to play against rather than the big, good, aggressive, strong, but not as quick central defenders. So I would love to have had a crack at Ramos and Piqué just because, you know, they are the best. So it's they're the ones, and I would Piqué, I don't think, would have kicked me up in the air. Ramos would,
yeah,
guaranteed. And so therefore, the aggressive side of it would have, the challenge would have been more against Ramos than Piqué.
Jackie gave an answer. I invited answers because we didn't get to this the other day. He said, presumably you'll pick a defender. He's right, by the way. As your natural and loathed adversaries always seem to like a challenge, so I'm going with Sergio Ramos. Well done. Yeah. Historically, now Martin joined in and said Pepe. Not a bad one, historically.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, definitely yeah. Good. Yeah. I don't like that.
Now, but Jackie said, historically, I would have loved to see him lock horns with the devil incarnate, Javi Navarro.
Oh, no, I wouldn't have done.
Right.
Scared to death. No, scared to death of him. But he had a partner as well. There was two of them. It was the player's name.
Oh. You're thinking of that. It made me think, when Javi Navarro, because the other Navarro was David Navarro, wasn't it? Who was the greatest coward, did the most cowardly thing ever on a football pitch, wasn't it?
Valencia central defender.
Yeah, that's Bodiso was being held, wasn't he, by teammates. I think it's his teammates were holding on to him. So his arms were by his side, and David Navarro ran from the side. He wasn't involved and punched him in the nose, didn't he, when
and
he was being
run.
Held and ran away. Yeah, it's extraordinary.
Javi Navarro, I'm not going anywhere near him. Come on, Jackie, be realistic. I know when I'm beaten.
And historically, of course,
I need the centre half's name, and I can Google it afterwards. But I'm sure.
Yeah, historically,
he was a doctor, his partner.
Yeah.
So there was two of them. Javi Navarro was an absolute butcher.
Yeah.
Really good player. Don't get me wrong. A stylish centre half that could play. God, did he love hurting people. And his partner alongside him, the name slips on my mind and really frustrates me because they were part of the early Sevilla team that won the UEFA Cups. And he was a qualified doctor. So, and he was hard as nails as well. Dark hair, beard. Mind you, that explains many of the players that we see playing in La Liga.
That's true. I didn't narrow it down.
No. And the joke was they hurt people and he used to be in a position to make them better. stitching them up. So those two, I can't remember his name, he's bugging the life out of me.
Historically, of course,
near Javi Navarro.
And Goikoechea was historically the butcher of Bilbao would be one, wouldn't it, to go back. But then it was dangerous business, wasn't it?
Because I played in an era where players had a career because they could hurt people.
Yeah.
And didn't get hurt themselves because they were always targets as well. And thankfully that has gone out the game to the extent that we are bordering on becoming a non-contact sport now. So it's
It's going to take too long. We'll do it next time. I can't remember either to go through Sevilla's team from middle part of the first. It's sort of 2000 to 2005. We're looking at, isn't it? That kind of
thing.
Right. We will. You don't have to put us out of our misery. We will sort that out. We'll let you know who the mystery man is. But we would like to hear from you, a Spain 11. Basically, and I think we don't look at each other's, but I'm not sure that we'll see too many replicated 11s. So let us know whether you're a Patreon or whether you're a regular podcast listener, in which case you'll have to use Twitter. And we'll see you for another podcast soon. No advert this week because of Sol Campbell, all his fault. And we will be back with more stuff about Spanish football again soon.